Hello, and welcome back to Notes of the North Talks, a series where we get to know our local Canadian musical talent. Today, I'm here with Royden C. Thank you so much, Royden, for joining me today.
Thank you, Brianna, for having me.
First things first, Royden, where are you joining us from today? Where in Canada do you call home?
I'm joining you online on this podcast from Calgary, where I currently call home. But I've called multiple places in Canada home. I've lived in Vancouver. I've lived in Toronto. And before that, I was born in Hong Kong and studied in the UK for a bit, too.
Awesome. So let's get a little into your musical background. So you studied piano and violin performance for many years. So how did you get into composition? Was it simultaneous to your instrumental studies or separate?
Yeah, definitely. I would say so. I, you know, like every good Asian child, I started piano, but I enjoyed it. And I wouldn't say this is the same story for every person who starts piano, and I really enjoyed it. I would just practice all late into the night. And then I remember walking down a street near my home in Hong Kong, and I just was listening. I heard some kind of music in my head, like some kind of Bach or Mozart. I wasn't sure. I was just like, oh, da 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 da, like humming to myself. And I thought, well, okay, like if I can hear music like that, maybe I could write it down one day. So that was kind of the first like spark of composing that popped into my head, but I didn't really take it seriously. And then fast forward a couple of years, I was in boarding school actually in England, and it was there where I started to dabble in Sibelius, using kind of notation software to just jot down my notes and thoughts and then play it back, which was super informative and helpful. So that helped me like hear back, oh, was I doing something right or that sound terrible? And usually it was terrible. So I would just kind of keep going with that, and then that led into kind of an encounter in Canada with a great composer mentor. His name is John Astacio. He lives in Edmonton and was the Edmonton Symphony's composer in residence. And through him, I was able to have the opportunity to write for an orchestra. And that listening to that result, to that piece that I first wrote for orchestra, cemented my kind of like desire to say, hey, let's take composing more seriously.
Awesome. What was that experience like hearing your work performed by a large ensemble for the first time?
Well, yeah, like they were a very good ensemble for sure. And I was taken aback and very impressed by what they did. And I thought, from now on, I'm going to just write for orchestra because every other experience would be like this, right? Wrong, you know, because you get orchestras that are great. You get orchestras that might not be like as prepared as, say, a professional orchestra. So there was a lot of learning, but that first experience was like, wow, you know, it opened my eyes in a great way.
Awesome. Shifting gears here a little bit. In your opinion, what are some defining characteristics of contemporary Canadian music?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, well, there's definitely such a multiculturalness about Canadian music. And, you know, you've spoken to many of these composers before in your podcast. You know, listen to Brianna's podcast, everyone, if you haven't. but, you know, there's just such a diversity. Composers coming from all corners of the earth to make Canada their home, which brings a lot of flavor to it, you know, and there's really no one way of defining it. Certainly, I think Canada has seen its kind of, there's this kind of mid-century period in Canada where things are very much like, let's be like Europe and be like post-tonal, you know, Boulez, da-da-da. And there was that kind of niche of contemporary music. But I think nowadays it's in a much kind of healthier place where everything's been opened up. There's less kind of dogma of like you should compose in a certain style, which is great. And there's no right or wrong way about doing music. There's just kind of what feels right to you, I think. So everyone's kind of doing their thing and it's very diverse in that way.
Beautiful. There's definitely something unique about different cultures coming together in Canadian music. So you personally studied music both in the UK and Canada, and you're also from Hong Kong. So how did these different musical environments shape your style and approach to composition?
I would say, you know, being brought up in Hong Kong was a very interesting experience because it's sort of already a mix of East and West. You know, it was a British colony until 1997. But also part of China, you know, as part of the Chinese mainland. So there was this kind of Britishness to it. And like, there was this, people spoke English, you know, we got taught English in schools. And then there was also this Chinese kind of background of culture. People were Chinese there mostly. And so growing up there, I was able to see both sides and see kind of the benefits of both sides. Although I think at that time in the 90s, it was very much like very pro-Western. People were like, hey, yay, the West. And then it kind of shifted a little bit more. And then it shifted back because of recent events and everything. But in Hong Kong, that was, I think, the case. And it kind of, I think, built in my mind that it's possible to kind of go either way. You know, it's fine. I'm a Chinese person, but I also can think kind of thoughts that were like outside of that bubble and try to kind of explore what identity means outside of China and in the West and so forth. And then fast forward to maybe a couple of years later in like the early 2000s, I went to boarding school in England. And that was also a very formative experience. I went to a small town called Eastbourne. That was where Debussy finished La Mer, his symphonic work. And I was like, I didn't know that at the point. I was just like, hey, I'm at school, you know, I wasn't really into like that much music. But that experience was very, it was like very standard Western. I don't know how to say it. It was just like you're in a British boarding school. You would, you know, do all the things that British kids did, and you'd learn English and go to sports and stuff. And we did music, and the music was very much Western. There wasn't much Chinese music or international music at that time, I think. And so I was like, okay, yeah, this is the music that I loved anyways. I loved Mozart, Beethoven, you know, all those composers. And so that was a great kind of foundation that led me to explore more about how to put this all together in a compositional kind of way. And then Canada was like another like open eyes moment, because I thought my two kind of experiences in the world were Hong Kong and England at that time. And going to Canada was like, wow, this place is so big, and like there's so much possibility here. That was kind of my first thought, you know, like it's a big place, but there aren't as many people, and you can kind of, you have that freedom to do what you want. And which is contrasting to, I think, some of the mentality in England, where people were like, hey, we did this for like 1,000 years, you know, why are you trying to change this? Or like, this is the kind of trend here. But Canada is a relatively young country in comparison. And so there's this kind of feeling of possibility of like, you can really make your mark here as a person, and as an artist. So, and it was also in Canada that I started seriously, you know, thinking about studying music and studying music here. So Canada, I think, made the most impact for me as a composer, and just kind of helped me see what the world could be as through composition, really.
Awesome. Well, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but I want to go deeper into this fusion of Eastern and Western. How do you blend that inside your music, and could you give an example?
Yeah. And it's a thought that I've kind of maybe 10 or 12 years ago, I started thinking about, because I had this kind of very Western upbringing. I had this idea that I would write symphonies and like sonatas and string quartets. I'm like, that's the form I aspire to. And then when I started going into composition and meeting other composers, I started to think, well, there are these composers, these great Canadian composers who are like from all these parts of the world, and they're doing this great thing of their cultural identity. What about my kind of identity too? And then started asking that question. But when thinking about fusion of East and West, I always thought that it wasn't something that I had to do, right? Just because I look like a Chinese composer doesn't mean I have to incorporate Chinese works. So I feel like it had to come somewhere kind of authentically, first of all. And if you look at some of my pieces, like some of them, yes, have been inspired by, say, Chinese poetry, Chinese texts, or Chinese instruments. But then there's also a lot that are very purely just like, this is a string quartet, that's it. Or there's like a concept behind it. So for me, I like to try to keep it fresh and try to keep it like authentic. Like, what does this piece need first? And then I consider whether, you know, whether or not I need to bring in, say, my background in my cultural background, or think about exploring other kinds of musical influences. But I always think about the fusion of Chinese instruments and the East and West as this very broad concept, not necessarily related to just instruments or texts or themes, but more broadly like the Chinese way of thinking, or the Chinese mentality, the psyche, and also the Western psyche, and how that kind of can collide but also meld somehow. So I like to start from that, because that I think creates something more unique. Because you know, there's so many great works out there that blend non-Western instruments, for example, with Western instruments. And so my goal is not to replicate that as a composer, but my goal is to think about deeply, like, what is the real connection between East and West, right? And do we need to even say this is a fusion of East and West, or can it just be like, this is a piece? And then you kind of, but what I want the listener to kind of get is kind of feel the Eastern energy and also the Western energy somehow, without making it so explicit in a way.
It's definitely really interesting. Is there like a specific piece where this connection, or like psychological connection at least, is evident?
I feel like my first big piece for orchestra and sheng, the Radiant Light Concerto, was probably the piece I put the most thought in about, like, how should fusion happen in a deep and kind of like personal way, right? Because so that concerto for sheng, for those who don't know, it's a piece that incorporated this folk song. And this folk song, I took the first 5 notes of the folk song and treated it in three different sections. One was about like the rising of the sun, and then the second section was about the midday, And then the third section was about the setting of the sun. So there's this kind of arc to this composition. And so I wanted to think about the piece, first of all, from this narrative point. Like, can I create this narrative that people can understand first? And then the folk song kind of makes its appearance in kind of fragments throughout this kind of piece. So people can, if they know the folk song, can kind of pick bits and pieces out. But it's really not, it's not supposed to be a rehashing or a rearrangement of the folk song per se. It's more kind of a deeper treatment of saying, going deeper into the folk song and then taking that material that is already so familiar for some audiences and then transforming it into this larger sound kind of palette. That is, I think, what Western music can do really well. What composers have done historically is that they can take simple material and then like expand it into like these big, big forms, right? So I wanted to kind of try that with this kind of quintessential Chinese material and then try to like work with that and then also throw in a sheng, which was the first time I've ever done that thing for like I've never played with a sheng. And then I consulted a person who knew how to play sheng in Toronto, and he gave me some really important like advice and tips on how to write for sheng, and that became the sheng concerto with an orchestra. So that whole process, I mean, I'm simplifying here, but it really led me to think deeply about what that fusion could mean on a personal level. Without having to say, kind of appeal to tropes or like bring in certain influences that are very obviously, say, Chinese.
Another thing we have to balance in music nowadays is contemporary influences with kind of traditional forms and structures. And I know you have a piece called Unrelenting Sorrow that was noted for late romantic directions. How do you balance these contemporary influences with the traditional forms?
Yeah, that's also another great question, because nowadays as composers we have such a rich possibility of technique. You know, we've got all the innovations that have happened in the last 100 years, extended techniques. We've also got electronics, you know, the ways to generate and manipulate sound live or like pre-recorded ways. So there's just like the Pandora box has been opened. We really can't put everything back in. And as composers, I think it's our job to kind of consider all that, like what can we do with these tools instead of saying I'm just gonna stick to this one path and do what I, you know, can do. So I think that's what excites me as a composer, just like looking at all these tools and think, how can I try to find this kind of way to incorporate that within a logical musical statement that hopefully people can understand and can kind of retain in their mind. And so, speaking of Unrelenting Sorrow, I think that was a piece that I wrote during the pandemic. It was a commission from the Toronto Symphony, and it was, yeah, like it was a sad piece, as the title kind of suggests. Like, it's not light entertainment. It's just this kind of heavy orchestral music. But within it, like I started with this idea of creating, how do I evoke the feeling of layered sorrow, right? Like, I imagine all the people that experience loss during this, you know, troubling time, obviously. How do I kind of bring that all into a symphonic piece, a piece where, you know, it could involve 100 people on stage, right? That's sort of this metaphor for community and society in general. And so I thought about layering these lines, these ascending lines, kind of like a river. You know, you see these kind of crests that kind of go over each other, and that's kind of the idea that I got for Unrelenting Sorrow. So this melodic line just kind of goes above and above each other, and the crescendos to a couple of points in the piece. And then during this kind of crescendo too, I added different percussive kind of techniques. Like, I used the güiro to indicate this kind of abrasiveness to it. I asked the horns to play a quarter flats at points to just kind of offset the sense that we are in a normal kind of symphonic setting, or like everything's in one key. So I've just used some of those elements to offset the listener's expectation as well. So, you know, and I at the end of the day, I think these techniques, and you know, we're talking about electronic manipulation of sound, etc. I think all of this has to be done in context of what you're trying to achieve as a composer. And I always think about that, like what I want to say, and how do these things kind of come into my universe and help me say those things. And if they're not important, then there's no reason why I shouldn't, you know, I should include them in this kind of universe and sound world I'm trying to create. So I think it's a very personal process, and probably if you ask other composers, they will have very different answers. But I do believe that, yeah, like they play such an important role, and it's great to incorporate them in some way, but within a very clear vision of what you want to achieve.
Yeah, definitely. We have such a wide array of options now to choose from and explore. And I think you blend traditional and contemporary very nicely. And so you are also an educator now. So how do you approach teaching composition, and what key lessons do you aim to convey when you teach?
Yeah. Well, I guess Yeah, I've been an educator for how long? I mean, probably like 10 years. So I am still an educator, and I still consider education being this super important part of what I do, because I think I just have this, I don't know, I like communicating and connecting with people, and composing being such a solitary event. It's always nice to have this other side of like, I go out and I work with younger people or even older people to just like communicate and show them what music can do. And I think because I'm inspired every day by the composers I listen to, and I try to do some of that in my own music, and I feel it naturally comes to me as like I need to somehow tell other people about what we're doing, because the composer community, as you know, it's a small one in the broad kind of landscape of music. You've got contemporary composers, and you've got like maybe film composers, and you've got like Billie Eilish. Right, and then you've got like everything else that's out there, and we're just this kind of tiny microcosm. And it's interesting because I go out into the community, and sometimes I talk about like what I do as a composer, and they're like, "Well, there's a living composer, like what's that? I thought they're all dead, and like they're like Beethoven and Mozart." I'm like, no, actually, we're alive, we're still composing, but just in different ways. So right now, I'm teaching at the University of Calgary, doing some composition teaching, and what I try to instill in them is the idea of how everything should come from this artistic vision, And I touched on this before, where I said like, there's just so much possibility, there's so many tools available. Like, how do you, first of all, like assimilate all of that, and then secondly, how do you innovate from that? How do you draw from that rich resource and bring it and turn it into something your own, right? So it has to come from this kind of knowledge, I think, of what you want to say. And I try to work with my students in different ways on how to get that, because you can say that, like, say what you want to say, but it's like, whoa, what do you do? Like, it's such an abstract concept. And a lot of, as you know, music and composition can be so abstract. And so for me, I want to try to de-abstractify it. And that's not a word, but I just made it up. First here on Brianna's podcast, guys.
Yes.
To de-abstract, like, all this kind of thing, to kind of say, okay, this is an, you might have an idea, maybe it's like a sound, maybe it's an image or narrative. Let's try to condense it into a timeline of sorts, or let's try to condense it into a couple of words that resonate with you as a person. And then from those kind of materials, maybe like very, very sparse, maybe it's a chord, maybe it's a melody, right? Whatever it might be, let's condense it, and then let's see if we can extrapolate that into the future, like for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or an hour, right? And see what happens when you do that. And then from there, you think, okay, I've got this idea. Let's think about technique. And always technique comes after, I feel, that kind of hashing out a vision, hashing out of what you want to say. And then we can start having those more detailed conversations like counterpoint, harmony, blah, 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 blah. So that's what I hope to instill. I don't know if it's successful. We'll see at the end of the day with the teaching reviews, blah, blah, blah.
Awesome. What do you enjoy most about being a composer? And then what do you enjoy most about being an educator? There are these two different roles that you have.
Yeah, oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think with being a composer, it's always like listening to your piece, being able to go to that performance and say, well, like this is what I worked on for a year, and now I can finally hear the, professional orchestra or great soloist play it. That's always very rewarding. But more and more, I also find that like I really value the artistic process, the journey of getting to that final product, because maybe it's due to age, because I've done this for a while too. So I'm like, yeah, I've heard the premieres, I've heard the great orchestras, but I always feel like the journey is always different. The hardest thing about being a composer, I think, is starting with that blank page and going, what do I do? And then from there, if you take that first step, then the second step usually comes, and then the third step, and so forth, right? But it's always hard in that first kind of blank slate kind of starting point. After, I think overcoming that challenge in different ways each time is also a very satisfying thing for a composer, being like, oh, I found this kind of creative solution. I've written another orchestral piece that's different from that previous orchestral piece that I did. Like, yay, let's celebrate. So that's also very rewarding. So that process from nothing to getting to something is always different. About being like an educator, I think the rewarding thing is seeing students like click, like, oh, they understand something, like, oh yeah, this is like so cool. Like, I'm glad you showed me this, right? Like, I play a lot of excerpts in my classes where I go, oh, this is a composer that you should know about, in relation to, say, harmony or counterpoint. And they're like, and I ask the class every time, I'm like, has anyone heard of so-and-so composer? And like, no one puts their hand out. And I'm like, great, this is your first time hearing this composer, And so that's also a very rewarding thing, because you remember your first time, remember your first time hearing like a great piece of music, and that how that experience kind of sticks in your mind. So I think like being that person for maybe a class of students where I can introduce a great piece of music, it's like, wow, I can be that for them. And also being able to like guide them in a way that like helps them and encourages them in their journey. Because I think like that's what a great teacher can do in composition or in any kind of format where creativity is involved, right? It's not about establishing what is right or wrong, unlike certain fields where you do need to know what's right or wrong, like mathematics. Okay, there's a right or wrong to that. You got to enforce that very clearly. Engineering, okay, lives are going to be lost. Let's enforce right or wrong very clearly. But in music and art, there's no right or wrong answer. Just kind of what's stronger for you as a person. And so being that encouraging voice, I think, is so important, but also very rewarding for me to be like, hey, maybe I can help you with this and speak to this problem that you're having and try to help them with that. Yeah.
Beautiful. To wrap things up here, are there any exciting upcoming projects we should look forward to?
Yeah, I guess so. I say this very like unconvincingly, but so today actually, as we're doing this podcast, maybe a couple hours ago, the Philadelphia Orchestra just did a piece of mine in Beijing, which I can't go to because it was like they only announced the very last minute, but they did a piece called Yellow Crane Tower with singers, a baritone and tenor soloist and orchestra. So that was very exciting. So unfortunately I can't be there for that, but in the future I have a commission for a concerto for string quartet and orchestra happening in Maryland with the Annapolis Symphony, and then a premiere of a long like an older work called Stepwise, inspired by jazz, with the Esprit Orchestra in Toronto. So that's happening in 2025. So those are the main things going on for me right now.
Amazing. Well, that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much, Jordan, for sharing such beautiful pieces of your art and heart. Until next time, folks, keep listening for the Notes of the North.